Welcome to the Move Rural Canada podcast, where every week we showcase incredible businesses in rural and northern Canada. Businesses that are not only growing, but are looking to hire.
We're here to show you companies and communities outside of the big cities that are building stronger and more inclusive workplaces. Workplaces that want and are encouraging newcomers, immigrants, and refugees to work with them.
Let us be your guides to help you find the best places in Canada to not only immigrate, but build a career and settle.
I'm your host, Leah Mitchell.
And I am your co-host, Lindsay Rubenek.
Join us as we learn about all of the amazing career opportunities in places that you may not have ever thought of moving.
Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to Move Rural Canada. And today we have lovely Miss Christine Doris with us today. And we thought we'd have her on this show because she is someone that, you know, exemplifies how you can immigrate to Canada and really have a successful career and create a really great quality of life in rural Canada. So we're going to start off by welcoming Christine to Move Rural Canada.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Absolutely. It's been a pleasure and more so an honor to be chosen to be part of your podcast.
Going to say in typical rural fashion, we're all stuck at home today because of a snowstorm in Manitoba. So that's also sometimes typical in rural and northern Canada, right? Schools get closed, roads are closed. You get to work from home or not work at all.
No, this is I see it like a treat, you know. You kind of it's a good day. A good day to get sick and stay home.
Yes.
The only problem though is with technology, it actually forces you to work now too though. So yeah. you know before 97, before the internet, we could all be like, oh, okay, you know, I can't connect to anyone today, so I'll just have a stay home day and do whatever. But actually I have several meetings lined up because, you know, I could still do all my work from home because we have connectivity, right? So that's the great part. All right. Okay. So before we, you know, get too much into it, I think the very first thing is that we should ask Christine is to, you know, introduce herself, tell us all about yourself, where you're from and your journey here.
Okay. My name is Maria Christine Diores and I'm born and raised in the beautiful Philippines. And, I traded my flip-flops with the winter boots, but that was a hard decision, but never regretted it. So I arrived in Canada on a closed or a temporary work permit in February of 2011. I have no idea what I'm going into. I have no idea what is cold. When my employer told me through an email that it's going to be cold here, of course, living in a country with 30 degrees Fahrenheit, 30 degrees Celsius average all year round, you have no idea what minus 20, you know, you have no idea what minus is. And so what brought me to Canada is to work in a pig barn or a hog barn just northeast of Roblin. And I have a close contract with them for supposedly 2 years. But it didn't work out that quite well. It was cut down to 3 months and I was unfortunately terminated while being on a work permit. So that was a very tragic decision that they have to make. But I was, at that time, I was only told that you still have your work, I mean, your visa. So if you could just find an employer, you can stay in Canada. And that was my biggest decision, is whether to stay or go home. You know, I already tendered my resignation from the government position that I left. So there's no work for me back home. And so I decided to I'm going to do my all best to find a good employer or any employer that would take a person on a temporary work permit. And that wasn't easy because not most locals, especially around the rural area, they don't know the process of getting in an international or foreign worker, and most of them would really want to shy away from the paperwork. You know, when you talk about the amount of paperwork that they have to go through, the legalities and all that, it just stops them right there. So I was lucky to be in a rural, even though it's a rural area, I was lucky that we have at the time a local settlement officer, and she really guided me through. She said, you know, she told my this employer that would like to hire me, and she said, you know what, I'm going to help you through the process because you don't know the process of acquiring international foreign or foreign worker. Here are your options. You can hire locals, you know, but see, the thing is that these locals, you know, they're not going to stay, you know, they may probably respond to your ads like, hey, I'm from Toronto, I'm from the big city, I want to, you know, they're going to give you all the spiel like, yeah, I like small town. But when they set in reality, you know, they'll stay for 2 months and that's it, and they'll quit. So this local settlement officer was trying to explain to my new supposedly interested employer that if you get an international or a foreign worker, you have at least 2 years with them. You know, that's because they are bound to the contract. And, you know, if you treat them right, they're happy with you, who knows, they might stay longer than what you thought. And mm-hmm. So to make it short, my 2 months ended into 10 years. I stayed at the vet clinic for 10 years, and I called Russell my home.
So I was just going to ask you that. How many years ago was the process? Because you live and work in Russell, Manitoba, and mm-hmm. they have come so far from when you arrived. Like they have their, you know, all of our employers are now aware of LMIAs. They're, you know, we have a lot of foreign workers in our region. So it was about 10 years ago that you came, or 15? How long ago?
Yeah, that would be 2011. Yeah.
Wow. Well, and it's really interesting too. You made a really good point. You know, I think a lot of rural employers, they're worried about all the paperwork. But if you have someone supporting you, right, if we can get more settlement or more people in the settlement realm to support the employers, then they're going to hire because it's not so overwhelming and you know, scary. You know, and it's a great point. You know, we want people why not hire people who are already local and who want to stay, you know, and who, like you said, you were there, you were ready to work. Why wouldn't you hire you over, you know, someone who wasn't, you know, mm-hmm. like it makes perfect sense to me. Yeah. So what were your first impressions? Like, did you live in a large city in the Philippines, or was it a smaller town, or what was your impression when you came to the rural area?
Oh, I live in the city. Let's say Davao City is one of the big, it's actually the biggest city when it comes to geographical and land area. It's the biggest city in Asia, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But Davao City at the time, we have at least a million population. And I was working, it's a pretty good city. I was working for the city veterinary officer. It's a government position. And coming to rural area it was at the height of the winter, February 25th. So my employer, the first employer that I had, he said, when you got to the airport, just go cross the airport and you get to the Greyhound bus station. Yeah, he made it sound so easy that you're just crossing the street. But here's the trick. I lost my luggage when I arrived at the airport. So I have nothing. Oh. I have nothing. I have a sweater and I arrive in a sandal in February 25. So, and crossing the air, it's just like a, yeah, it's one block away, but to cross with the knee-high snow, I have no freaking idea. Like, so this guy working at the airport, he lent me his boots and say you can cross and you can just leave the boots there at the end of the at the lane. And here and then he gave me also his winter jacket because I just had a hoodie when I arrived at the airport. And said, okay, you could, now that you have winter jacket and you have boots, you can cross, you know. So I was very grateful for that guy, you know. People really, well, right at the airport, sorry, I have to sneeze.
Well, I'm just going to add in there while you're talking. That's a really, what you brought up, there's a really important piece is that, yeah. that I think a lot of companies need to get better at, like properly preparing employees when they come to Canada to come and in February and for no fault of your own. I mean, that's to me, that's an employer initiative. That's an employer responsibility, ensuring that their employees are properly supported from the moment they, you know, touch ground in Manitoba. I mean, that you could have ended up with frostbite. There's lots of things that could have happened. And that's why Lynn and I are so vocal about, you know, the companies that we interview, we want to make sure they're truly supporting employees from the moment they get here and that they're properly prepared, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there's lots of resources available online. So it's not even that the employer has to recreate this. Now that they can just cut and paste when they email the foreign worker, they can say, hey, so you're coming to Manitoba and this time of year, this is what to expect and this is how to dress properly. But I must say, that must have been surprising to you that somebody gave you their winter boots and their jackets. It's kind of like a Canadian or, you know, prairie thing, is just to be very generous. So, so I'm glad you ran into, you know, some really nice people. So I'm going to ask you, by default, then, did you choose going to Russell? It wasn't by, you know, really, it was where the job was. Is that the way how you got to rural Manitoba?
I still went through a lot of after my termination at the Hogborn. There was another Hogborn out in Steinbach that offered me, and they say, oh, we have an open LMIA and you can come here. So when I ended Friday, I went. At that time, you know, you just take the bus, you know. So I went to Steinbach the following day and try to work there. But they say, oh, we're doing the papers and all that. But it wasn't really. So he said, I can't really give you actually because I meant to give this LMIA for someone. So I'm like, oh my God, now I'm working under the table. I don't want this. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, when, you know, you're at the tip of the sword, you know, you're hanging by there on a thread and you kind of just take the job, whatever you have. And this is what really pisses me off now. I just realized that people pray and it doesn't matter who they are, whether they're locals or they're other nationalities, they pray on your vulnerability, you know. That's the gauge, because as a temporary foreign worker, your document is your Bible. It's the thing that holds you to the ground to Canada. So when they say, oh, we have an open work permit here for you, open LMIA at the time, like, yeah, I'll grab that for sure, because that's how I'm going to stay legally in Canada. But then at the end of the day, 2 weeks after finding out, they're not really going to do anything about me. They want to try keep me under the table. And so, like, I cannot do this. I'd be deported if people find this out. So I have to stop working. And luckily, before I left that was in Roblin. Before I left Roblin, there were a couple interested applications. I mean, employers. One was the Russell Vet Clinic, but when she called me and she said, oh, I'm interested to try out, see how it works for you. And then when I said, like, oh, I already got this offer in Steinbach, because they have a ready document, you know. So I went in there and then, oh, I'm sorry about that, but if you think that it's not going to work out there, you know, you could can try and come back here. So that's what happened. At least she gave me that assurance that she would still be willing to to try and work out for me if things doesn't work out in Steinbeck. So I called her right away after 2 weeks after I was working at that hug barn and said, like, Kathy, you remember that, you know, I want to come back there and, you know, start all over again, if you are willing to work with me on the documents. And so to make long story short, yes, we started, she started working out on the documents in June of 2011. And in October, I got we had the work permit changed to switch to her as my new employer.
That's Christine. I just want to say something to our listeners who are newcomers that is very, very important. And this has become an epidemic in the immigration world. I never thought it would reach rural Manitoba or rural Saskatchewan, but it has. And it happens all over Canada. And I need all the listeners to realize this, especially the employers. It is illegal. It is unethical to be charging foreign workers for their positions. And it is happening. And I want to be very clear to the foreign workers is that you will not necessarily be deported if you pay for your jobs. You got your job, you have your work permit. It is actually what you have to do is report your employer. The employer does not have the legal right to make you leave Canada. The only people that can make you leave Canada is the Canadian Border Agency, so the CBSA. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is something I really want to make clear because you brought that up about working under the table.
Yeah.
And it's I've had so many people come to me lately telling me that they could get an LMIA if they pay $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, and then they have done it, and then they won't pay the consultant that got them the job to do their permanent residency because they don't have $20,000, which is outrageous, ridiculous. You should never pay that kind of money to do that. So then the employer says, we will send you home if you don't go with this consultant to our lawyer who brought you here. That is untrue, that they cannot make you go with anyone. You can do your immigration process all by yourself, or you can choose to hire a reputable lawyer or consultant. So I really want to thank you for bringing that up. And I think it's very important we address it because it's getting worse instead of better. LMIAs are getting highly competitive. So, and as well as the federal government just took away points if you had like the 250 points to the express entry. So getting an LMIA in Canada right now does not and will not, and no one can ever guarantee you that it will get you immigrated to Canada. So take heed, be aware, labor market impact assessments, you should be very, very knowledgeable on them. And the foreign worker does not need to pay anything to get a job. So I just want to say that because it's becoming worse instead of better. So thanks for bringing that up about working under the table and being put in a really bad situation. But I think we should digress from that. And I want to hear how you got into that better spot. You got yourself a really great employer and I want to hear about what happened from that point on.
Yeah, what happened next and how did you settle in that, you know, rural community coming from such a large, large city?
Yeah. No, I think it's quite a lot of shock, but I think it's because I've always been wanted to, I've lived, like when my childhood, I live in a small town, you know, and I can't, when you got your career and you moved to a bigger city for a job, and that just kind of changes because, you know, you're in a survival mode. And when I moved here, the funny thing is that when I took the bus on Greyhound, it's like it was winter. It was like going into those apocalypse. And like I cannot find one person on the street. I'm like, what is going on? And this is a dead town. They're like, where are the humans? They're all hiding anyway. So now I got to realize that it's kind of like a feast when it comes and spring comes. It's like, oh my God, it's a new life. It's a fresh breath. And doesn't really bother me living in a small town because when you look at it, all the rustle at the this we've been growing. Maybe 1500 when I arrived, 1500 population when I arrived in this community, and it keeps growing. And the good thing is that there's a big business entity out here in the area that gets a lot of, I mean, prioritizes or chooses over Filipino foreign workers to for their company. So there's a bigger Filipino community that has been created in this area. And I would say right now we're probably hitting 400 population Filipino here.
Wow.
Yes, in Russell and Biscarth area. And so when I arrived, when I got here, you know, I don't have my kids. So I have to find my way to be busy, you know, instead of sulking myself, having the kids not here. I went out and be more part of the community. And that's a problem with most immigrants, you know, when they feel comfortable already, they don't, you know, I'm quite comfortable in my own room. I have enough food. I don't need to go out. And, you know, and I always advocate that for immigrants or newcomers, you know, just because you got what you want doesn't mean that you chose this area. You need to be out there. You need to be taking yourself out and letting the people know that you are here, because that's the only way you make connections, you know.
Mm-hmm. And build opportunities.
Yeah. Yes, and build opportunities as long as you know the local. And it also gives a good impression to the local community that, you know, oh, these people are, you know, out there, you know, they're willing to be part of the community. And so when I work at the vet clinic for at least 10 years, I learned and I met a lot of people from all walks of life, you know, the farmers, which are the basic and the most integral part of the economic development in an agricultural area, basically. So I met a lot of them, pet owners, business entities, and a lot more, you know, and then you realize how blessed and how lucky we are to be in this area, you know, and this area is so abundant. And it kind of just like make me realize that people are not that grateful. Most locals are not grateful for what they have in locality, because, I mean, you're born to that. You see that every day, and, you know, and you don't really realize how, and for me, looking at the from a different perspective as an outsider, when I call, my God, you have no idea how lucky you are to be in this community. And that was kind of like my advocacy for the locals. You gotta see the good part in your community, because you're so blessed. You are so blessed to be in this area. And then after 10 years of working at the vet clinic, when my boss decided to retire, I also find another, you know what, I could change my career, you know. And so I opted to, and there was this position that opened as a local settlement facilitator in the area, which I kind of love doing it, because I'm connected with the people in the community. And even though before getting into that position, and I was still working at the vet clinic, I was working side by side with our local immigration officer at the time. She was kind of like our mother goose. Like, she looked after everyone. She goes above and beyond of her job. And she would tell me, "Hey, Tina, do you want to come with me? We're picking up newcomers from Yorkton, people that just have no idea how to get here. It's the same thing. Their boss just told them, just take the bus and they'll drop you there. Like, we have no bus station here." So they ended up in Yorkton bus station. I don't know, but we picked them up at 2 a.m. and it's a blizzard. They have no idea that there's no bus station here. So we have to pick them up from Yorkton, bring them to their house. Their house was so freezing cold. And we have to, you know, and a lot of things that, you know, the simple things that really breaks my heart is that when you don't prepare the people to to come into the area. The first, you know, the first entry that they have is traumatizing. And that stuck, it really stocks up, you know, it sticks up with their, it's ingrained in their memory for the rest of their lives, you know, and that is not how you want to make people feel home. So how do you make these people stay, you know, when all this being stuck up in their brains is that, like, I came here and I was almost dying from freezing cold, you know.
Well, and that's their first impression of their employer,
that is,
right?
Yeah,
like your
yeah,
employer basically didn't support them at all, yeah. Right? And so then you start to question, and that's another thing I'm very passionate about. You know, how are companies supporting their employers to grow? Because, you know, most people don't want to stay in those beginner positions forever. They want to grow. They want to make a better income. They want to, you know, settle and buy a house and things like that. And there's so many things that play a part. I have a question for you, Christine. When you came, did you speak English already? Was it at a certain level? Did you find that affected anything that you were doing?
Yeah, because English is a second language in the Philippines. So English has been used since you were kindergarten.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been used in school, universities, and all that. So it wasn't a big deal to, you know, and I think that makes most Filipinos more
it's an advantage to have that level of English already.
Yeah.
And that's so important, because I think a lot of times employers are able to take more advantage of people if they don't have the English, right? Because now they can't maybe read or understand it, and it's taking them longer to get that language, and so they get stuck, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Christine, can I just to bring it back a bit in terms of, so you arrived here to work at a hog barn, and that didn't pan out. So, however, and then you went to Steinbach, and for a similar industry, same industry, that didn't work out. But the one employer, the Russell Vet Clinic, they gave you opportunity, and you spent a lot of time there. And then when your employer retired, you moved into a settlement coordinator. So that was, you know, that's pretty cool. And then I remember you and I talking about the position that came open. And what position was that? And you were like, no, Lindsay, I can't do that. I can't. And I'm an economic developer myself. So we talked about it, and you went ahead and you applied to be the economic development officer of the Russell area.
Absolutely. So yeah.
How that came to be.
Yeah. So when I was working at a local settlement office, this position came out as a economic development officer for Assiniboine Valley. And Assiniboine Valley Community Development Corporation is a conglomerate communities of Riding Mountain West and Russell Benscourt. So they fuse together and collaborate that we're going to do economic development office. So luckily, they gave me a break from that. So they want to try me. So, and that's probably one of the best opportunities that I could say. And it was a big shoot to fill in, because I know that the previous economic development officers were all in line, you know, they were educated in that line. And here I am coming from a different world. But I've always loved economic development, and I think it's very, and when I was still working as a local settlement officer, it kind of fused together, because it's basically when you bring a newcomer to the area, you're building them their economic life, you know. First of all, you help them with housing, you know, and that itself was the biggest challenge in the community. And it doesn't only happen in the big city, even in rural communities we are facing housing challenges, and it's across Canada. So finding them a home, but not only that, but it's not just enough that you find them a rental place, but you also need to look after them. Like, oh, it has to be strategically, they should be strategically renting in a place where they can just walk to work, because first of all, they don't have vehicle yet, you know. So all these things you navigate for them. And at the time, as a local settlement officer, you actually provide the entire economic aspect of the newcomer. So it's like So when if I move to this position, like I could probably wing this out, you know. It's just like so, and it actually is. And then I'm bringing that problem or concerns to the council, like, hey, you need to do something as a council. If you want to grow your community, you need to provide housing. That is basic. That is basic. It's not only for newcomers, because a lot of locals also want that, you know, the young adults wants to own their home too. And what would make their stay? What would be the reason for them to make stay in the area? If, you know, I want to get out from my mom's basement and I'm able to have a job. I want to own a home too, you know, or kind of like a rental place. So these things came out also when I become economic development officer. I know I opened a big can of worm. It's just like there's a lot of things that like, what am I even here? Because we can, there's a little bit of, you know, every day you pull out something different. And it's very challenging that there's a lot of opportunities in the area that were untapped, and there's a lot of problems too that it could actually be matched with the opportunities in the area. But I think that sometimes at some point the community is not just that prepared, you know, the council's priorities are, you know, different. So you can just do the best, however you can with a very limited resources. And I lasted there for a couple of years just because the contract ended. It has a 5-year contract with Riding Mountain West and Russell Benscard. So when that ended, the other municipality have a different perspective or understanding of their own economic setup, which is fine, you know. And the other community also is looking into a different economic perspective. So both of them are working on and how they can best put their economic status. So there's no economic development offices right now in both municipalities, but I believe they are, the council is working on it.
And before, I was going to say, you know, don't knock skills. I mean, you're a highly trained professional, and skills are transferable. You know what I mean? And I think that's what's great about rural areas is you get that opportunity to transfer those skills into different opportunities. You know, like you said, you started off at the vet clinic, you know, you were working in settlements, you made connections there, you know, you got there, and then just through being so involved in the community, and I was so happy when you talked about that. I think that's, like you said, a big piece a lot of newcomers miss. They come, they sort of stay with the group maybe that speaks their first language, and they're not getting out there. And that's one of the biggest things you have to do. You have to go out there and meet people and connect to mm-hmm. everyone, because you never know what opportunities correct. Are going to come your way. You know, it's yes, very important right. in Canada. It's all who you know.
Yeah. It's networking, right? Yeah. And it's really mm-hmm. hard to get that across to especially newcomers, because they're like, well, I don't have the Canadian experience. But actually, and if you're to let the cat out of the bag, so to speak, or the secret, it's always who you know. Anytime I you know, really got a contract, any referrals I get for clients, mm-hmm. It's who I knew, it's who I talked mm-hmm. to. So it's really important, as both of you just said, when you arrive in a community, is that you immerse yourself with anyone possible, like volunteer for the local Humane mm-hmm. Society if you like pets, you know, or volunteer wherever you can. And so that means not getting paid for doing a project. So that's what volunteering is. And that's why how Canada was built. It was through volunteering and small business development. But by volunteering is the way how you meet people. And then by meeting people, you may meet somebody in the industry you want to get into. And you know what? And that's the way how it always flows. You walk into an interview and there's that person. They're like, I know Christine. She's a great volunteer. She knows our community. She'd be a wonderful economic development officer. Right? So it's all in who you know and how much you immerse mm-hmm. yourself in especially in a rural town. That's yeah. really what yeah. wins you the point. So great point.
Yeah. So we're almost at our 40-minute mark here. So I want to ask you a question, Christine. Mm-hmm. So what would you say to other immigrants who are considering moving to rural areas as their new home? Is there any any advice or things you would recommend when they're chatting with employers or if they're just thinking of moving here and then finding work?
When we are, I think one of the biggest, I would say, not achievement, but one of the biggest and most significant action plan that I have left in economic development office is that when we start, we initiated the West Central Manitoba Immigration Initiative. It is like it's a special pathway for specifically for the 8 communities in the area. So in that West Central Manitoba Immigration Initiative, our office initiated it. So we have Russell Binscart, Riding Mountain West, Roblin, Rossburn, Ellis Archie, Gambler First Nation. We have also our the Yellowhead community and Prairie View Municipality. So there's actually 8 municipalities that are involved in this immigration pilot. So this is for the communities that are one of the biggest challenges that I found working in the economic development office is that the need to address the local short labor shortage. And when you look at the job employment board, there's at least 200 jobs posted every day that no one's responding.
Right now, Lindsay posted that the other day. There's 200 jobs right now in that area that people apply for.
Yeah. So how do we address it? And, you know, the local businesses are the backbone of a small community. And so when we, as part of the criteria that we look into is that when you come to the area, you want to make sure that you're not just there because it can be abused. You know, people already that are within Canada, when they see this opportunity and they're desperate to stay in Canada, they're going to use all those avenues to stay. But then what we wanted is a retention program. That's what we wanted, to let them stay in the community, contribute to the economy, and be a part of a growing community, not just getting the paper. You know, when I become permanent residence, I'm totally out here, you know. And we've seen that a lot. And it changed the dynamic when, after COVID, I've seen a lot of people that have stayed. I would say 80% when as a local settlement officer, I've seen 80% of the newcomers have stayed in the area. And there's still few that would like to venture when they become permanent residents. I want to see what city life is. And that's fine, you know, that's beyond there. But what I would recommend for people that are coming to the area is that you chose to be here. That's the thing, you know, you chose to be in that area. You have a responsibility to immerse yourself. You know, it's not always what I can get from this community or what benefit can I get from these people around here. Now, we're used to, as newcomers back then, we're used to people are just, the locals are so generous. They're so loving, they're so welcoming, and they would always give you whatever you want, you know. And I don't want this to be abused by newcomers, you know. And newcomers should understand that that is their way of welcoming you, and it should not be abused. So you got to think as a newcomer, okay, and you put aside, yeah, we bring our cultures, okay, you have that innate with you, but you also have to come to a country that, and you have to respect their values, you have to respect their cultures, you know, kind of had like, okay, I'm this, I wanted to stick around with what I believe. Yes, you can do that in the four corners of your own home, but when you're outside, you got to be respectful of everyone's values, because it's a very diverse community out here. And actually, we are lucky to have that harmony in a very diverse community. We have no, so far, knock on wood, we have no problem with racism. You know, it's not really that kind of like blatantly you can see in other places. So just be part of the community in any simple way that you can, you know, just being visible there and just be respectful for, you know, your neighbors, whoever, you know. I think that's what it is. And I think you gotta stay You got to stay humble, you know, you got to stay, you're starting from ground zero, you know, when you leave, when I left my country, I forgot who I am, you know, I forgot, I left that all of a sudden, you start fresh, you know, you adopt the values that are going to be building you as a new person in a new country that you chose.
Thank you for that. I think you said it perfectly, you know, just come in with an open mind, right? Be willing 100%. I always say 100% keep your culture, but, you know, be open to maybe adopting a few new things too. Right. And
yeah.
Share. And exactly. I think you said it best. Well, thank you so much, Christine, for coming on today to the Move Rural Canada podcast. You've had a great interview with us. You've shown us, given us a lot of we talked about a lot of things that I think people don't want to talk about, and having your experience about good employers and the not so good employers, I think is so important for people to understand. And Lindsay, for exactly explaining what are your rights. I think that is so important. So
it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you again for coming. Thank you everyone for listening. Lindsay, you can close us.
Okay. Well, thanks, Christine. And thanks everyone. And we'll see you next time, or listen to you next time on Move Rural Canada. And liberal, live well.
If you feel this could assist other people like yourself, please like and share our podcast. As well, we will leave links below to the topics we spoke about today. Thank you for listening, and join us next time to learn about another great company and community that is a great place to work and settle.